Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to another edition of the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 82, being recorded on the 24th of June, 2015. I am Sujit Mello, and on Skype with me, I have Kale Teeter. Kale, it's nice to be back. I think our astute listeners would have noticed that we missed a week.
We're going to have to make that up. Sorry, schedules there last week, and we didn't end up, didn't get the show out, so...
Yeah, and it was a bizarre week for everybody, including Evan. And Evan's actually in a crit set today, so unfortunately he couldn't join us. But I'm sure he'll join us next week. Customer always comes first, and that's I don't know about you, but that's the situation I was in last week. Is a lot of customer demands and just no time to do anything else. So that's the nature of the work and the business. But so you were saying you had some new. Azure service to talk about, something like a gateway of some sort?
Yeah, kind of our new segment here, but the new thing that came out this week, it just went GA, was the Application Gateway, is what it's called. And essentially this is kind of like the VPN gateway, but slightly different. And you can take a look at it there, we'll put the link in the show notes, but essentially, like to me, is a layer 7 switch or a load balancer. And essentially, you can spin this gateway up, and then you can use it for things like offloading SSL. So basically, you could have your certificate installed there, and you don't have to install it on all your IIS servers then, and have it do the logic for you. Does a bunch of other things like routing policies to be able to balance the load across multiple VMs that are sitting on the other side of it. And so it looks pretty interesting. Looks like a new offering, but basically, it's a software load balancer.
Okay, and you can somehow customize it pretty extensively, it looks like, right? Because I think in the past we had to deal with the limitations of Traffic Manager to do that.
Yeah. So it does all that. It can actually do the affinity too. So basically, like if you have a session or you're trying to make sure that all your requests from a particular source IP are going to the same server, it can handle that kind of stuff too. So pretty nice offering. I need to get some hands-on with it. This thing just went GA, but...
That's nice. I somehow missed the preview part of it. I'm glad it's gone GA now. I don't think we had announced that over here on the show, at least. I'm not sure if I missed it. But yeah, definitely worthwhile getting hands on that and trying it out. So the topic for today we want to talk about is something that it's more of a generic topic for Azure and may not be specifically for Azure, but it does apply to Azure. And this is the whole concept of... PaaS, containers, and microservices. These three buzzwords are swirling around today. I think I'm sure everybody hears them in every discussion you have with your IT folks or with customers. And I thought maybe we should just have a little chat with them because there's just a lot of confusion about these three things and how they relate to each other and what they're used for. These buzzwords get thrown around a lot, and it's easy to get caught up in the hype of these buzzwords. And I thought we should just quickly chat about it and figure out, where does Azure fit in all this eventually, right? And does Azure fit in all this? Which the answer is yes, that's for sure. But we'll figure that out as we go along. So, Kale, does this come? Do these words come up in your discussions with your customers today?
Yeah, definitely. And just like you said, there's a lot of confusion around all these different things. And we'll start off with PaaS, right? So we have basically two large ways that we can deploy workloads in Azure. One's PaaS and one's IaaS. But PaaS itself is, it's kind of big, right? So if we started looking at a web workload, so we could run that on a traditional VM, kind of a lift and shift. We could move that over to the server. And then when you say, well, what's the PaaS offering? I mean, that's kind of large, right? So we could run it in what I call the traditional PaaS, which is the web role. And what that was, basically bring your application, you got all your code, and bring that, and we'll package that up for you, include two other files, a configuration and a definition, that basically tell Azure how to spin up a VM to host that app. Essentially, that's what it's doing. You can set up your endpoints, all the different things that would go into you actually provisioning the VM, but the platform will do it. And then you go to the other end of the spectrum with web apps, which are also PaaS, but they're deployed in a totally different way. You just bring your application. You don't have the concept of even managing the VM. You're really just managing the app at that point. So there's, from a PaaS perspective, it's kind of even beyond this container stuff that we're talking about. There seems to be a lot of confusion there too, with people like, "Well, I want to go PaaS. What's that mean?" And so it's interesting to talk to people about, what are the requirements. I think that's the big thing with Azure is not necessarily like attaching to these buzzwords, but attaching to what's your workload look like? What are you trying to do here? Like, and understanding what kind of restrictions are going to be on that, and then we can figure out where it fits.
Correct. Yeah, this is a good point actually. And I know you kind of started off with PaaS, but I like to start off with this definition of microservices, right? Which has become a very popular thing today. And I think the microservices eventually does feed into PaaS or does feed into containers. So let's just take a look at it from an actual workload perspective, right? But the actual use case from a developer is to build these so-called microservices. And what is a microservice? Microservice, I think it's at its very the very common definition is it's fine-grained SOA. Okay, it's essentially a service that does a specific thing. It does it very well, and it has very few dependencies or almost no dependencies on any other service. It's kind of like a standalone service. Okay, think of it like your infrastructure services that you have today. Maybe it's a logging service or a configuration service. Has no depend no de It's not dependent on anything else. It may have its own database, it may have its own security model, etc., but it is not dependent on something else, on another service. So that is your standalone microservice. And there are a lot of advantages today and why people like microservices. One of the advantages brought up is I think people talk about the Netflix re-architecture, where they move from this monolithic application into a microservice architecture, and the process that they went through, and it turned out to be quite a positive thing because that's a huge infrastructure that Netflix has, and they were able to now be more agile as a result of microservices. So what they're saying is that these microservices, you can build each team, you can have very small feature-focused teams. Okay, you don't have to have this large feature team that has got to worry about dependencies and code drops and me affecting your code and so on and so forth. They're focused on one building one thing, and they can do it using any technology that they want to. If they like Ruby, they can do it with Ruby. If they like .NET, they can do .NET, Java, whatever it is, because they're building just a little service that exposes some sort of a web API. Okay, I know some people like to say REST endpoint, but I don't like to use the word REST because it gets misused a lot. I like to use the word web API. Yeah, Kale, go ahead. It's like you want to say something there.
Just to comment on the whole microservice, it's a buzzword, but the thing that I think about is it's nothing new, right? I mean, these concepts are, they're kind of new, with these new terminology and stuff, but it's the same stuff that we've been doing, right? So when you think about an application, right? The application isn't just there with business logic. There's other things on top of it. We have a data layer. So typically we have a service layer then as well, and we have, like you mentioned, logging and caching and all these different things that we build into our application to make a kind of a robust app. And in the past, it was like, well, us as developers would say, well, we're going to kind of decouple those things because our caching solution, maybe it's tied to AppFabric today, maybe we want to tie it to Redis in the future. Well, that's a great idea for why you would want to have that decoupled and just have that isolated so that you can swap that out with whatever the new technology that comes along. Logging, same thing. If you're using Splunk or you're using some of our native stuff, you can switch between those. And so when I think of this, when I saw this first coming out, it was great because it was basically just more decoupling, saying like let's give some more isolation. And I think we could have done that in the past even. I mean, you could do that even today, but the issue, and I think the kind of cool thing that Azure brings to the play here, and I don't want to steal your thunder with Service Fabric, but I think that piece is what makes the whole microservices thing work, because if you thought about like what we just said, well, you could break out all of these different pieces inside your app, all the different layers, and build a service for it. Yeah, that's a lot of work, right? You have to set up a lot of infrastructure to do that. So I think
Absolutely.
that's maybe where the key comes in here, you know? Go ahead.
No, that's quite right. But I just wanted to say one thing that, the reason why people like microservices and why there's this drive towards it is that these microservices, as I said, they let you can almost reorganize your entire company, or at least your IT division or part of your company, to kind of match these microservices. So they build up into small teams, right? And each team does the complete service from ground up. Okay, you're talking of building DevOps, the whole DevOps idea. They're not only building the service, but they're also deploying it, and they're deploying it in something, and we'll come to that later. And they get to handle the entire soup to nuts of that service, okay? And then they have multiple teams that each one takes care of X number of services. Now, the microservices by definition don't have any dependencies, but you can combine microservices to form more intelligent services, right? So a typical application wouldn't be a microservice, or may not necessarily be just a microservice, but it might consume one or more microservices in some sort of orchestrated way. And that's what makes it a useful service that produces some real output that can be consumed by other devices or applications, things like that. But at the end of the day, these microservices, if you're talking about them, or these application services which are using these microservices, you got to host them somewhere, right? And this is where we come into where do we host them? And then the two options that we're talking about right now, at least in terms of this discussion, are using some sort of a PaaS environment or using some sort of a container environment. Now, there is, and this is where we have to clarify why one is better than the other, okay? We talked about some of the advantages of PaaS. They're, you get this, you have to work within this kind of a restricted environment in terms of what you can do, but what you get out of it is a lot of manageability. You get fault tolerance, redundancy, you get infinite, almost infinite scalability, and so on and so forth. That's something that you get out of the PaaS system. That's what PaaS gives you. If you deploy it in a container, okay, a container is nothing but a mini VM, right? I think that's the best way to describe it. And now you've got, it makes it really nice because you can put all your logic for the microservice in one little container, and nobody else needs to worry about it, which is fine. It meets the guidelines of microservices, but it doesn't handle things like orchestration, deploying these services, rolling them back if they fail, being able to route to different versions, all those nuances. If there is some sort of a backend failure, you want to take a service out of action, fault domains, update domains, so on and so forth. So containers don't really offer a whole lot of that to you today. I think there's a lot of infrastructure coming up that allows containers to do this, but this is where I think containers sometimes fall apart a little bit if you're talking about a true scalable and redundant environment to host your microservices.
Yeah, definitely. I think, the things you hit on there, Sajid, doing a lot of the infrastructure, I think that's a key word with it. Like all the pieces, the orchestration pieces to make all those things work, right? The container does a great job of, isolating, your layers or whatever the application workload is that you're running. But when it comes to, orchestrating these things and making them work together, I think that's the key piece that we have here with Service Fabric.
Exactly. And so I'm glad you mentioned that. So Azure has something called, well, so before I go to Service Fabric, I want to just say one thing, okay? So we haven't talked about the cloud per se, right? We talked about PaaS, and PaaS could be on your premises, correct? Or it could be in the cloud, but we haven't really mentioned the word cloud until now. We said that we need to have a PaaS system that is somehow, reliable and redundant and can fail over automatically and things like that. Or we have this container environment like Docker or Hyper-V containers coming up soon. that also that offers these mini VM concept. So yeah, we never talked about we haven't talked about cloud a whole lot, but what these microservices, because they are targeted to small groups, you know, being able to build stuff using whatever technologies they want, you also want to give them an infrastructure that they can play around with very quickly. Being able to spin up, say, a Java environment or a .NET environment or a Ruby on Rails environment, and you know, as an on-premises system, that's difficult, right? You can't just put up, you know, one farm for Java and one farm for .NET and one farm for whatever XYZ technology. That's not something that's cost-effective to do. And so, if you want to promote this microservices architecture within your company, you have to give them the technology freedom. And this is why putting it in the cloud makes sense, because typically a cloud PaaS offering can give you some choices about how you want to host your app. Like, for example, we have web apps today that can host, you know, .NET, ASP.NET, but you can also host Java, you can host you know, Ruby and Rails, right? There's other options out there, PHP, Python, etc. So this is the cloud tie-in over here, right, for microservices, that you give your developers the freedom to get the environment that they like, that they are most comfortable with, and then you know, deploy those services in that environment without you having to do anything. So this is the advantage of moving these microservices to Azure. Okay, that's the Azure tie-in. Now, within Azure, we could use the traditional model, which you have already described, the PaaS model. There's also another model which is relatively new, and Mark Rusinovich just talked about it, I think, in Ignite recently. And this is the Azure Service Fabric, which is brand new. You know, that is something, as a matter of fact, I don't think it's even GA yet. Right now, there's an SDK that's out there, and you can download the SDK and deploy it on your machine. It puts everything into one box, and it creates this one box cluster that you can play around with. It's not even in the cloud yet. They're going to have it in the cloud, and as a matter of fact, they're going to have it in such a way that you can deploy it on Azure as well as on premises, and it'll be a hybrid environment. It'll scale across both, you know, all the nice things that we know about hybrid environments. But sorry, did you want to say something, Kale?
Yeah, no, I think in many ways this kind of parallels where we came from, right? So when we had PaaS to begin with, let's go back to ISVMs. ISVMs, you know, it's lift and shift like we talked about. So people are comfortable with them. It's a machine out there. We install IIS. We can configure it to our heart's content, and we can lay our application on it. And then when PaaS came along, it was like, well, how do we do this without having to wait and deploy this stuff up to the cloud? So we had the emulator, right? So it was part of our toolset in Visual Studio. We could run the Windows Azure, or now it's Microsoft Azure, but the emulator. And that would emulate compute, storage, all those kind of things, the services that we'd be hitting in Azure. I see this as kind of like an evolution beyond that now. So it's like we can download this SDK, and you can literally provision all the stuff we've been talking about. So if we had all these different layers separated out with different applications, we can kind of run that little mini data center in our machine, yeah, just the same way Azure would. And we can, like, you know, play with it and do our development there, make sure everything works. And that's a very small scale, right? We're running it on our laptop in most cases, and then take that same workload then, and it's configured in that way, bring it up to Azure and just scale it right from there. So very little work once we bring it to the cloud. I think it's amazing.
Exactly. And just so that our listeners understand, this is not just another variation of PaaS, right? This is a completely different system. It does offer all the facilities that PaaS does, but it tackles the very problem of microservices. Okay, so that's what it's trying to go after. So microservices today, the general recommendation is that microservices should be stateless, okay, and that you shouldn't have state in them. But I'm sure you know this better than I, Kale, that it's very difficult to build a stateless service, right? There's always some state involved somewhere. And what they say is that, okay, you know, you should keep the state somewhere in another service and then just rely on that service for state. But then that kind of breaks the whole rule about, you know, having dependencies and whatnot in microservices. So what the Service Fabric allows you to do is allows you to build stateful and dateless services. They do that in a very cool way, and this is one of the earliest kind of discussions on the service fabric that I heard probably a couple of years ago. So they have cracked this problem of the distributed collection. Okay, because if you think about it, state is what? It's a collection, right, of items. You want to put something, you want to get something relative to the user. And doing that in a distributed way and keeping all that in sync has always been a problem. We've tried to solve it in different ways, using SQL as a kind of repository, using maybe some sort of a memory as a repository at various tiers. But they have cracked this problem of being able to have a collection metaphor, just like a regular collection, but the collection would be totally distributed and in sync no matter which machine you were accessing or which node you were accessing it from. And this solves the problem of state. So now you can build these stateful microservices and or use state judiciously. Of course, you don't want to misuse it, but you can have access to state in these microservices, which will be hosted within this service fabric environment. So I think that's one of the biggest draw that I got out of it is that it frees us up to build services in a way that we're used to and not having, us to really confine ourselves too much in building these microservices.
Yeah, definitely. Anybody that's worked, up through the ranks, I know that you've lived this, and so have I. Where, back in the day, back when ASP.NET first started, it was all stateful. The idea was let's make the web kind of like a Windows app, and that involves a lot of state, carrying around a lot of state with the application. And then, we kind of SOA was born, and REST came about, and all these kind of things about like how we have to decouple, and we should have these services that just handle their isolated thing. And then the app becomes really chatty, right? So it's like, okay, if you have no state at all, then it becomes really chatty because it has to like revive that state every time when it makes a request. And so there's a lot of, development has gone into that to try to figure out how to solve that. So this kind of, I think, helps the developers in most cases not have to focus so much on thinking about all that stuff and just focus on the app logic. And I think it's kind of one of these technologies or service fabric especially that couldn't happen without the concept of containers and these things. So it's kind of like all these technologies coming together at once. I think they needed to be there at the right time for these things to kind of happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think containers does have their place. There are some things that you can put in container, and I believe Service Fabric will support containers as well. It's going to make it fairly seamless. It's going to allow you to orchestrate these containers in a PaaS-like way, right? So if that's your, if you prefer to deploy your stuff in a mini VM like a container and do it, that's fine. It'll probably work within the Hyper-V container model, I would guess, given that that's what Microsoft will treat as a first-class citizen, but oh, sorry.
I mean, the way I see this, Sujeet, is the easiest way I could figure, get my head around this thing was the example I heard of, if you think about an Azure SQL database, this is out there on the public web. We should put a link to this, but this kind of helped me get my head around where do containers fit in with Service Fabric. But it was like, so if we have an example of an Azure SQL database cluster, and it's leveraging Service Fabric. So underneath that, you could have, hundreds or thousands of machines, and each one of those like machines is actually hosting thousands of containers, and each one of those could then be hosting thousands of databases. So you can see how the scale and how those pieces, that kind of helped me get my head around it.
Hey, Evan. Good to glad you could join us.
Hey guys, sorry I came in late. The thing that I'm struggling with is like, and how is this fundamentally different than, say, worker processes, isolated worker processes in IIS, like we've had for years?
Well, I think the one thing, Evan, that I saw that, and I've just been playing with it since we've been talking, in, in the last couple of months. But they have this concept of a pool, which I didn't see there before. So, but essentially, you could go in and define a pool of VMs that you're then going to target with stuff like all these workloads, containers, all these things, and then you could scale those pools in and out to add more machines. Because it's kind of abstracting away the VM a little bit more.
So it layers under. So you're taking kind of the goodness of that model, and then adding in the goodness of the abstracted hardware that we have in the public cloud.
Yep. Yeah,
Okay,
that's
that
exactly.
makes sense because it allows you to scale in both directions instead of traditionally we've only been able to scale at the OS level, for lack of a better description.
And I think the way they're going to do it is that the scaling will be possible either on premises or in the cloud, you know, so you could do it both ways. This is not just going to be an Azure only, a cloud only solution. It's going to be a hybrid solution.
Yeah, I think that's where everything's going. I mean, you look at like what how HPC is doing things now, and the like, right? Azure Batch slash HPC, you know, they're all about, you know, you can put some here, you can put some in the cloud. It doesn't really matter,
And the other
right?
nice
So it
thing
makes
that.
sense that we would do the same thing with the containers.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, the one more thing I want to say about microservices and the kind of specific problem of microservices that is solved by Azure Service Fabric. So microservices, as we mentioned earlier, they're all these independent services that have no dependencies, but they can be combined to form interesting things, interesting services. Now think about it, right? So you have one service, let's say, that's calling to say 10 microservices in the back, right? And it's kind of orchestrating them in an interesting way. So a single call from a user to your service could now spawn one, two, three, maybe 10 calls to all these microservices in the back end. And you know, some people might say, wow, that's a lot of network traffic, right? So right away you got to worry about, okay, is my network going to be able to handle it? So that's one problem that you have to think about when you use microservices in totality, is that your network is going to be very, very busy. And then how do you make that more efficient? We've been used to saying, okay, you know, we should use web API, right? HTTP, JSON, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Those are all nice, right? But we all know those are also kind of verbose data formats, and they take up a lot of bandwidth. And if you're going to have these microservices being called, you know, millions of times because they are used over and over again in an orchestrated way by all these services, you have to use something different, something that's more compact, maybe. You know, and they talk about some other options. I think there's some Google format that they talked about, you know, or some kind of binary format. You know, the microservices, if they're not going to be consumed out of the company, you don't have to have them as web APIs. They shouldn't. They don't have to. They're not constrained by that. You can use another protocol, which is a little more compact, a little more. Less session oriented, maybe, as opposed to session lists like HTTP and things
Right.
like that.
Yeah, I'm still trying to, I completely agree with everything you said, but you know, at one level, as somebody who used to support XML, I'm still struggling with the fact that we just call JSON
Exactly, right? It's a totally different level now, right? I mean,
Yeah.
everyone moved to JSON because it was less verbose than
Yeah,
XML. You're right.
exactly.
But now, when you think about these microservices are being combined on every call, so every call is resulting into 10 JSON services, right? Now you're worried about the JSON overhead now. You know, it's a
Well, and yeah, because you take a big connection hit, right?
Exactly,
Making
exactly.
these, and I guess that's where some of the session full stuff is going to come back, because then you don't take the, you know, initial TCP handshake and the SSL handshake and all that kind of
Exactly,
stuff,
exactly. You
which is
got to
kind of
optimize some
going
of
back to what we did, but you're now
that.
merging it with the concept of the microservice. So it's like taking the best of what we used to do and combining it with some of the capabilities that we have now,
Exactly. And I believe
right?
that the microservice, the Service Fabric, Azure Service Fabric architecture takes this into account. It has these pluggable protocols that you can use to
Right.
enhance, to make it a little more efficient for these microservices.
Yeah, you know what
I
that
think it's
means?
just funny. Sorry, go ahead, Evan. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, those of us that have skills from 10 years ago writing code, we can bring them back.
I know. My sockets knowledge is going to be useful again. Look at
Exactly.
that.
I just
Sorry,
think it's
Cam, what were
funny
you
because it
saying?
feels, yeah, I think it's funny. It feels like, we're down this path of, disconnecting everything, and we have all these different services, and everything's async. So there's like 10 different async calls going on at once, and managing that becomes a nightmare if you've done that, And so if you can get back to stateful, it's just like, wait, we did that before, but now, like you said, it's kind of got a twist on it now, which actually makes it scale, which is pretty cool.
I guess in some ways that shoots the hole in, right? There's part of me that when we talk about, that the stuff moving to the cloud thinks, oh, this is just thin clients all over again. But it isn't. It is at one level, right? But it isn't when you say, ah, but we're really. It's not just that we're going in this circle. It's that we have realized, hey, let's take these good things from back then, combine them with these new things that we figured out and learned and new concepts, and now you ultimately get something that's much better than what you had, instead of just thick, thin, which is what we'd seen historically, right?
Exactly.
You just kind of bounce back and forth between those.
But I mean, I think one of the takeaways I had from my reading on these various topics these past few days is that microservices is a good architecture. I think that's here to stay. It's not just a buzzword.
Right.
How you host it is something that we were debating. You know, would you host it in a containerized environment or in a PaaS environment? And I think the Azure Service Fabric kind of allows you to do both if necessary, because it does solve the problem of making sure that these environments, all these containers or services, are always available, and you know, they're redundant and things. They have three copies, automatically synchronized, blah blah blah.
Yeah, no, that's actually the PaaS thing really catches my attention, because man, wouldn't that be cool where you don't even, like, you just infinite scale, but you get scale within scale within scale.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just layers of scale at that point.
Exactly. Yep. So I'm hoping that, you know, I'm definitely going to download the SDK for the Service Fabric and try it out. That's set up my little one box environment. And as soon as it's available in Azure or on premises, in I think as part of Windows Server 2016, we'll be able to then just, you know, use it within those environments when the time comes.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Yeah, so you were saying earlier, so the SDK is out there, right? We can put a link out to that. You can download it now. It's in preview. But there's, I believe there is some stuff up there in the preview, at least in the preview portal now, where you can provision some of this stuff, because I had spun one of those up.
Okay, yeah, you may be right. Maybe there is something out there. Is that on the regular portal, or I didn't see it in my login?
No, I don't think it's in the existing production portal. It's in the preview portal only, I believe. And I'm not sure how the deployment stuff, how much that's all worked out yet, but it's definitely there, because you can provision it and set up your pools and all that kind of thing.
Okay, cool.
Now you got me wanting to go check and go see it. I actually hadn't noticed that in the new portal.
Cool.
Excellent. So, Evan, how was your crit set? Did you get it resolved finally?
It's still going.
Yeah,
it's one of these where and you know, it's interesting, because this is, you know, in some ways it's relevant to, you know, the conversations we have on this podcast. We, you know, in the on-premises world, right? I don't know about you guys, but there's so much complexity to the environment, and redeploying things is so difficult that even when you strongly suspect that there's just something weird with this server, right? Something, you know, some combination of, you know, A plus B plus C plus D, you know, that just doesn't work well, but nobody knows what B and C are, right? Nobody even knows that B and C got set. You just fight it and you fight it and you fight it and you fight it. And eventually you finally, you know, maybe get somewhere, or you just finally say, hey, I give up. I'm just going to pave this server. But yep, you're still on the same hardware, right? So yep, maybe there's a hardware component to it. In Azure, one of the things that, and it took a long time for me to kind of realize this, but, and think this through, is there are certain components. PaaS is a great example, and some of the service components I support sit on top of PaaS. It is absolutely no problem whatsoever to tell the Azure PaaS Fabric, hey, I want to just redeploy my instances. And oh, by the way, I want them to be just like I deployed them in the first place. Like, there is, like, I don't even have to worry. That just happens automatically, right?
Mm.
And so we're fighting a problem where, you know, we look at it and we go, man, this is just weird. This doesn't make any sense. It looks like there's a bug with, you know, a Windows component that Azure is consuming. And man, you know, even if we get all the data, we're not going to fix this tonight, right? There's just no way. So we just finally decided, hey, let's just do a PaaS thing, and let's, in essence, redeploy new PaaS instances. No impact to the customer. I mean, they don't have to do anything. We can do it completely on our side. They don't have to, you know, like, if you delete your gateway, you have to, you know, on premises, you have to change your VIP, right? Because your IP changes.
Mm-hmm.
If we do it behind the scenes where we just redeploy, all that's preserved, right? So it's really like hitting this master reset button with something, and it's completely controlled by us on the Microsoft side.
I see.
And it really gives us the capability to say, hey, you know what? We pulled all the data. Let's just hit that master reset button and immediately get the customer back up and running.
Yep.
Right? And you know, that's kind of where we got on this, and that's kind of why I was late, was because we were fighting trying to get that last little bit of data before we hit the master reset. But you know, in the on-premises world, we'd probably still be fighting this thing for days because you can't hit that master reset. And the container stuff that we're talking about, and you guys talking about today, that's in the same boat, right? Hey, this one container really seems just wrong. You know, something went wrong that doesn't make sense. We don't think it's our code. It's, you know, the container code itself or something. Just spin up another
Blow it
container.
away, exactly. Yeah, that's one of the things with this new architecture also, is that there's no manual anything, right? In the on-premises world, you might have somebody actually walk up and, okay, now we got to put a new image, now we got to put new software on it. You know, it's kind of a manual process. There's no manual stuff in this new world. It's all done, orchestrated, and automated. So there's a set of scripts that run, and they do it. And I'm sure that's what you've done, right? You've just rerun all your scripts, and it took a few seconds or minutes or whatever, and it rebuilt everything. I think that's it, right? Anything else we want to discuss on this topic today?
Now, this is, I think it would be great to put this as like maybe in 3 months, come back to this one very specifically, and when we have some more definition around, you know, what's going on there.
I agree.
Agree. Yeah.
So.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. And next week we're gonna have a special guest, so hopefully that'll be an interesting show as well. We'll record a little earlier, and
sounds
hopefully
great.
Evan won't have another quit sit next week, so you'll be able to join
See,
us.
it's all these customers, you know. If they
I
just quit
know.
calling me, it'd be fine.
Just lose your phone number already, okay? Just kidding.
Sounds good, guys. See you in a week.
Take care, man.
See you guys.
Bye, Gail. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.